Scientists have proven that learning establishes new neural pathways, even in older adults. You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of The Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. As always, I appreciate you choosing to join me to listen to this podcast, for my goal is always to help you maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. In this episode, I'm continuing my Introduction to Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia series to help you build a foundation of knowledge. In case you missed it, episode 7 kicks off this series. In that episode, I discuss the history of Alzheimer's disease and share how relatively short society's awareness of the disease has been. I talk about the relationship between dementia and Alzheimer's and the prevalence of the disease worldwide. Over 27,000 new cases every day. Almost 20 new cases since you hit play on this podcast just about 1 minute ago. I discuss what Alzheimer's is, how it affects the brain, and how it progresses. This includes the stages and how to find the positive. You must reframe your view of the disease by identifying remaining abilities rather than focusing on loss. Here's what I'll be discussing during this episode: theories to the causes and the risk factors of getting Alzheimer's disease, what can be done to prevent Alzheimer's, what research is being done. I'll discuss clinical trials and studies, and I'll conclude with a discussion on why maintaining hope matters. Let's get started by discussing what causes Alzheimer's disease. At this time, in 2017, there's no definitive answer to what actually causes Alzheimer's disease. Every day there's new articles touting this new discovery that may cause Alzheimer's. At one point, I was keeping a list, but after it surpassed 50 items, I stopped maintaining it. I'm sure it would have more than doubled by now. It includes everything from lifestyle choices to environmental factors, and some pretty absurd things. And if you flip around the cause, you can say avoid this or use this to prevent dementia. For instance, if you say stress causes Alzheimer's, you can turn that around and say reducing stress prevents Alzheimer's. There's a lot out there as researchers fight to justify their funding, and bad guys use the hype to prey on people's emotions. Now don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to take away hope, but we have to use common sense and appreciate just how complicated this disease really is. Understanding the cause won't be easy. Everyone has a different biological chemistry that's impacted by our life experiences, such as where we lived or how we handle stress. What this list taught me, and what researchers are now saying, is that Alzheimer's is likely caused by a combination of things over years of impact, such as lifestyle factors, our environment, and genetics. So let's talk a little bit about these three categories, starting with lifestyle factors. It's no mystery that the way we live our life affects our health. Historically, however, we haven't been taught to think about how these choices affect our brain health. But it just makes sense that if something we do affects our heart or another aspect of our health, then it's likely affecting our brain as well. That's why things such as poor diet, lack of exercise, chronic stress, along with a lack of purposeful mental stimulation, seem likely culprits. Chronic stress, for instance, increases blood pressure and inflammation. I'm no scientist, but I imagine our blood vessels are pretty fragile. So to me, it seems that if blood is pumping through them at an excessive pressure or rate, then damage is likely. This would also result in a reduction to the amount of nutrients provided to the areas of the brain. Just a thought. Next is our unhealthy environment. For years, researchers have been pointing to things in our environment that cause cancer. so it seems probable that many of these things may also be affecting our brain health, potentially leading to Alzheimer's or another type of dementia. This includes, but is not limited to, things such as air pollution, including secondhand smoke, food additives, personal care products, and plastics that outgas. It just seems to be a big unknown. Did you know that aspartame, which is the main ingredient in most artificial sweeteners, gives thousands of people, including myself, headaches? I'm happy my body is warning me, but I fear that the vast majority of people are not getting these warnings, so silent damage is occurring. I also discovered that some cooking oils may, there's that word may, turn into a carcinogen when used at high temperatures, and some nonstick pans have even been determined to outgas as well. Also think about the recent findings about BPA in our water bottles or canned foods. And it's still there in some instances, even though we know it's bad for us. During my research, I discovered the following finding. Let me read this to you. National Institutes of Health researchers have found that the biological machinery that builds DNA can insert molecules into the DNA strand that are damaged as a result of environmental exposures. These damaged molecules trigger cell death that produces some human diseases, according to the researchers. That sure gets me thinking. I've talked about lifestyles and environment. Now I'll discuss our third category of things that may cause Alzheimer's, which is genetics. If you have or have had a relative with Alzheimer's, then understanding how genetics play a role is very important to you. However, due to the complexity of the topic, I'm only going to give a high-level overview, but you'll be able to find additional resources in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode9. There are genetic markers which researchers have correlated to an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. One instance of genetics playing a role is when an individual has early onset Alzheimer's and develops the disease between the age of 30 and 60. This represents less than 5% of all diagnoses, but the majority of these cases are from an inherited gene mutation. I also believe with public awareness and early detection, this percentage will increase. Researchers believe the APOE E4 gene variation increases a person's risk of getting Alzheimer's disease after the age of 65. Everyone has the APOE gene, but the E4 variation has been directly linked to Alzheimer's disease. Having this gene variation does not mean a person will develop the disease, and some people with Alzheimer's don't have the APOE E4 gene. Whether a person should have genetic testing performed is a debatable topic, and one that can only be answered by the individual once they've had the proper counseling. So now that we've covered the possible causes, what is the number one risk factor? Well, it's age. According to the Alzheimer's Association, the risk to developing Alzheimer's doubles every 5 years after the age of 65. 1 in 9 Americans over 65 has Alzheimer's disease, and this increases to 1 in every 3 over the age of 85. Similar trends exist worldwide. Additionally, the Alzheimer's Association states that almost 2/3 of Americans with Alzheimer's are women. Apparently, the reason for this is unknown, but it's believed to be a combination of life expectancy, biological and genetic factors, and different lifestyle experiences. Additional risk factors include a family history of the disease, racial and ethnic differences, and things that I just discussed during the possible causes portion of this episode. So how do we prevent Alzheimer's? Well, it's really more about reducing our risk. This is back to the "this may prevent Alzheimer's" comment I made earlier. We just don't definitively know, and all we can do is work to reduce our risk, and there is no one thing that will work for everyone. So we have to do what makes the most sense, and right now that starts with living a heart-healthy lifestyle that includes good nutrition, exercise, and good stress management. You will hear the Mediterranean diet mentioned a lot, but I haven't personally done the research to verify it. I also feel obligated to mention that recently a world-renowned Mediterranean chef was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. In her instance, maybe there were other lifestyle factors or environmental impacts. We just don't know. While we can't control everything in our environment, we can be an informed consumer. This can help us minimize our consumption of additives or pesticides in our foods and eliminate consumer goods such as plastics or non-stick coatings on cookware, which might outgas and be bad for us. The last thing that I personally think makes sense is to maintain purpose in life. Having purpose helps us keep stretching our minds by learning new things. As I mentioned in earlier episodes, scientists have proven that learning establishes new neural pathways, even in older adults. Obviously, more research into Alzheimer's disease and other dementias is needed. However, as mentioned in episode 7, as of early 2016, research funding in the United States pales in comparison to funding for other diseases. Research is either specific to the disease or focuses on providing better care for the person with dementia and their care partner. Researching the disease looks for answers into the cause, a potential cure, and how to prevent it. Researching for care involves providing better education and awareness for those who are caring for someone with Alzheimer's. This includes learning strategies to help reduce the use of ineffective medications and emphasizing the importance of the caregiver's health. It's my impression, and I could be totally wrong, that the vast majority of research funding goes to research silos focused on the disease. These are universities and private laboratories who are all working independently and often in a competitive manner. This leaves millions of families struggling to find ways to cope with the disease today. A very important piece of research is clinical research. This is medical research involving people, the goal of which is to identify ways to better diagnose, treat, and prevent Alzheimer's disease. This research relies heavily on volunteers. In fact, I recently read in the USA, we are short as many as 70,000 people. Most people think of clinical trials first. These trials test interventions such as drugs or devices in people against a placebo. Trials are an important way to test drugs that may reduce the symptoms of Alzheimer's or slow the progression of the disease. FDA approval requires a drug to have successfully completed a clinical trial. Clinical research also involves studies where people are observed in normal settings. Researchers gather information from groups of volunteers with broad characteristics and then compare changes over time. Studies include identifying ways to improve the quality of life for care partners by identifying what types of support, education, or training solve some of the challenges faced by the care partners. Clinical research is critical in fighting back against the disease. The level of commitment and risk depends on the trial or study the individual is involved with. Participants, both the person with dementia and their care partner, must understand that there will be no miraculous outcome, although I assume this is often the hope. Research helps provide hope for the future. For more information on clinical trials and studies, be sure to check out the additional learning resource in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode 9. I'm going to conclude this episode by talking about why hope matters. First, I'd like to say thank you to my friend Marianne Macacow for the inspiration she has provided, which allows me to share this topic with you. You'll find a link to Marianne's website in the resources. Hope, much like having purpose, provides us with a reason to embrace life. It also helps us get through difficult times by creating optimism and allowing us to have a positive outlook. As you hope for a particular outcome, internal drive is created and you will become empowered to discover ways to succeed. Hope is a choice made by each of us. Sometimes we embrace it, and sometimes we abandon it due to doubt or failures. Some outcomes are out of our control, like hoping for a cure, but the majority of times these outcomes are within our control, such as hoping to provide the best care possible for our loved one. It's important to appreciate what others are hopeful for so that we can have empathy and be compassionate to their needs. For instance, the person with dementia may hope to stay independent and do things they've always done. They hope that as the disease progresses, family and friends will continue to spend quality time with them, sharing love and creating new memories. And they hope that as their challenges increase and their dependence on others grow, they're not judged by others. You, as the care partner, may hope to continue enjoying life together and making more memories. You hope to maximize your health, well-being, and happiness while knowing they are safe. You hope you can maintain their dignity. You may hope for better drugs and treatments in time to help your loved one. And deep down, the care partner may hope to minimize the impact on their own life. This is not selfish, and it's totally normal. Remember, hope spreads like a smile in a room. Whether we call it hope, dreams, ambitions, or desires, maintaining and sharing hope is essential when coping with a terminal illness such as Alzheimer's disease. My friend Marianne Macacow of Hope Matters says, "It's an anchor that gets you through the tough, dark times and an opportunity to nurture and celebrate one another in challenging times." That wraps up this episode and completes the overview of the basics of Alzheimer's disease. Over the next couple of episodes, I'll start to dive deeper into topics such as testing, treatments, the psychological aspects of the disease, getting support, and many other things. In today's lesson, I discuss theories about what causes Alzheimer's disease, and you learn some of the risk factors, which include age, lifestyle factors, environment, and genetics. You also learn that while there's no proven way to prevent Alzheimer's, there are lifestyle decisions you can make that may help reduce your risk. I also touched on disease research and took a closer look at clinical research, where you learned about trials and studies which are critical to advancing our knowledge of the disease and providing hope for the future. I concluded by taking a look at how hope is a choice which empowers you and me to get through tough times. Be sure to check out the show notes, where you'll find links to all the mentioned resources. I've also included a link to register for my very popular and free Introduction to Alzheimer's Disease course. This series of episodes is based on that course, and the course includes additional resources and tools you can use to improve your knowledge. Take care, and I look forward to talking to you in the next episode. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherness.com/podcast.